What's going on, everyone? I hope you're having a spectacular day today. In today's episode of the Soundcast, I'll be talking to Sarah Collar of the Ocean Conservancy. Sarah is the outreach manager for the International Coastal Cleanup, and our conversation covers topics such as what led to her joining Ocean Conservancy, the organization's mission, what ocean acidification is, and more. With that in mind, let's get started.
To kind of start off something fun, because it is kind of summertime, and have a summer theme sort of question, I suppose. When I was looking at your bio on the Ocean Conservancy website, I noticed that it said you had scuba dived in the Bahamas. And I was just wondering if you could talk about what that was like, because that sounds like a super awesome time, obviously.
Yeah, that's awesome if it's on the website. Did not even know that. yeah, I was fortunate enough to get the chance to be scuba certified back a while ago in my teen years. And I got certified in the Bahamas. I did a semester program there off of the island of Cape Eleuthera. And I mean, talk about amazing, life-changing moment. I think I'll never forget the first time I dove a coral reef. Really beautiful, so colorful. Like it really is just a totally different world that you're immersed in. And the time goes by so quick on the dives. But I remember that being a really pivotal moment and just thinking, wow, I really want to work in some fashion, in some way to preserve an environment and an ecosystem as unique as this one. And just kind of had this like jaw-dropping moment as a teen. And that really got me into wanting to study environmental science and marine biology.
Mm-hmm. What kind of led you to kind of taking that course just out of curiosity?
You know, it was just word of mouth. I'm actually from Michigan originally, so I'm surrounded by what we call the freshwater oceans, and kind of grew up along, you know, Lake Michigan. Always loved the water, but had found out about this school. It's called the Island School from a friend of a friend, and he had attended. And it's a school for sophomores and juniors in high school. And you apply, and it's just it's basically a semester abroad program that you apply for. And I was lucky enough to get accepted. And it was really a pivotal experience for me, you know, a full semester being immersed in, you know, not only diving, but living on a campus that's really connected intimately to the environment. We had things like rainwater cisterns that collected the water that we'd use for showers and things like that. So I was really immersed in sustainable living during that semester and at a really kind of malleable age, if you will.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And they're kind of naturally sort of leads into what we'll be talking about to a degree in terms of where it kind of took you in your life. Can you talk about a bit, as you are the outreach manager for the International Coastal Cleanup and work with Ocean Conservancy, can you talk about the organization's mission as well as what kind of led you, maybe in addition to what you just discussed, to kind of pursuing this sort of work?
Sure. So our mission is, you know, it's quite simple. It's that we work with you, we work with others, we work with anyone to protect the ocean from today's greatest global challenges. And together we create science-based solutions for a healthy ocean and the wildlife and the communities that depend on it. And that's just straight from our website, but I wanted to make sure that I read it in full, because it really does encapsulate everything that we do here at Ocean Conservancy. We work on the challenging stuff. These are huge, vast issues that obviously the ocean is vast and far reaching. So it's the issues and the problems are also at that magnitude. And we work with people, and it's not just about kind of saving those iconic wildlife species that we love. It's definitely in part that, but it's also about communities and people and the people and the economies that depend on the resources that we get from the ocean and you know, the myriad resources that entails. So I think really it's that mission that drove me to Ocean Conservancy. You know, having it be focused just on the ocean was exciting for me. And the program that I'm in now, which I know we'll probably touch on later, but I had done an internship in college around the issue of marine debris. And so that really piqued my interest, knowing that Ocean Conservancy not only had a trash-free seas program, but one of the longest standing programs and one of the longest farthest reaching cleanups, yearly cleanups within the International Coastal Cleanup. So that was just really impressive to me and what drew me to the organization and to apply. So I was actually an intern first here. And, awesome. You know, 6 years later, yeah, I'm lucky to still be here. Really proud of what we do. I think we're quite nimble. We are flexible and kind of ever changing to the issues that are unfolding for our ocean. Even in the last 5 years, things have changed. So it's really exciting to kind of be on that wave, if you will, of conservation.
That's awesome. And I know, too, one of the things I wanted to bring up looking through the website is that, you know, Ocean Conservancy is something that's massive and spans like a lot of different regions around the world and a lot of different countries. And so with that, there's different sort of projects that you need to specialize in depending where you are. Could you touch on some of the projects that Ocean Conservancy takes on and kind of runs throughout the world?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, we don't even have offices internationally. We do just have offices domestically, but it is really exciting to know that just because we're not international, we do have work that does, you know, kind of reach out into, and we work with a number of other nations. So it's exciting in that sense too. So we're based in Washington, D.C. That's where I'm calling in from at our headquarters. And rightly so, we do a lot of work on the Hill as well, and we advocate for clean and healthy oceans on a number of issues or in a number of facets. So some of the projects, the program areas that we focus on, I think we're about 10 total, but just to name a few, we now have a kind of a brand new climate program. I mean, you can't really talk about ocean issues without talking about climate change. It really does kind of intricately weave and connect some of the other work that we do. We have an ocean acidification program. We have a sustainable fisheries program, an Arctic conservation program. We work in the Gulf of Mexico on restoration. And then I'm part of the Trash-Free Seas program. So depending on these different areas of focus, we do have staff kind of designated in different spots in around the United States. So for instance, our Arctic team, we have a couple of folks up in Alaska. Of course, Gulf of Mexico, we have a couple people dotted around in New Orleans and also in coastal Texas. So we try to be where our work is happening as much as possible.
Right. And what I was going to ask too, since you're kind of the perfect person to ask this kind of question to, being that you're part of the Trash-Free Seas program. When it usually comes to trash either in the ocean or that's piling up on the beaches, you know, it's kind of that sort of shocking thing where you see pictures of it. It's insane how much piles up in certain areas and that's so kind of spread out everywhere. Where is it usually coming from that it's piling up like that?
That's a great question. And ironically, or maybe not so ironically, around 80% of trash or marine debris originates on land. So it's this funny thing where it's passing through or it's going through watersheds, it's washing down storm drains, and it's getting out into bodies of water. And then a lot of times, scientists are still unsure as to how much and at what like portion, but a lot of times that trash washes back up on shore. So that I think is a lot of what we're seeing in some of these locations where it could be surface currents that are converging, that are kind of, it just becomes a natural trash catch, if you will. So that's nice. Kind of some of those images that we see of trash just piling up or kind of coming in on waves. And washing back ashore. So really the majority of it starts on land. It's a lot of single-use consumer debris. If we start taking a look at those pictures and looking at individual items, a lot of those trash items are familiar to us. So that's the number that scientists are kind of estimating at this point, roughly 80%. And then another 20% or so kind of originates from sea, whether it's just kind of lost or abandoned fishing gear or cargo vessel, you know, accidental release from cargo vessels, things like that. But honestly, the vast majority of it is washing down from upstream on land.
Right, and I know you kind of classified it as single-use kind of consumer debris, but to just kind of put some names onto that, what are some items that are kind of commonly found the most as examples?
Yeah, and you know, thanks to volunteers during the International Coastal Cleanup, we're able to kind of track these different categories of items because volunteers collect data on what they find. So, just to rattle off a few in the top 10, cigarette butts, they have been number one for all 34 years of the ICC. We've got plastic bottles, like a water bottle or a beverage bottle caps, food wrappers, like the kind of foily wrappers, like a chip bag or a candy wrapper, are very common. Let's see what else. Plastic bags, both grocery bags and kind of other plastic bags. So things like laundry bags or newspaper bags, just like any other type of plastic bag, are really common. So you can see the common theme here is that almost all, if not all, of the top 10 items are comprised of plastic in some way. So our program is really aware of this and kind of directing our focus towards plastic pollution. So you might hear that term a lot in conjunction with ocean trash or marine pollution.
Absolutely. And I was going to say a lot of that, you kind of see the common theme, not of all of it, but it's that common theme of a lot of this, in particular on the beaches are things that are going to be in shops that are right near the beaches. So it can be things that people buy, you bring to the beach and you just leave it on the beach.
Right, that
And
happens
so,
too,
yeah.
definitely.
I know one of the big trends kind of this past spring and in the summer as well has been the kind of trash tag challenge of people taking before and after photos of kind of cleanups on beaches or parks or areas like that. Is Ocean Conservancy doing anything to kind of tap into that at all, or do you have anything that kind of exists now that you've done before and continue to do that is in that kind of ballpark?
Yeah, totally. The trash tag challenge is so awesome. We've been really excited and have been following this movement. And you know, I think it actually originated a few years back, but there was a recent post on Facebook that kind of reinvigorated it. And it's been really cool to see. We actually have a blog up on our website that I welcome you to check out. It's between our director of communications and one of the original kind of guys that started this trash tag hashtag. And just kind of asking him about how it originated, where it started, and it actually did start inland, which I think is really cool to focus on and emphasize because it can seem out of mind for many of us who don't live directly on the coast. But this gentleman who my colleague interviewed, he's actually just in inland North Carolina, and he was walking trails and kind of having that connection with nature and being outside, and he was really upset about the wrappers or the different trash items that he'd see litter. So it was cool to kind of hear his perspective and how it all got started, and then to see it being picked up with these before and after photos. It's really awesome. And for Ocean Conservancy, it just kind of reinstates or kind of underlines what we've been working on and focusing on all along. So it feels good to have a lot of more awareness raised around the issue, and we hope that it'll encourage people to get out and clean up. And it's one of those viral things that actually has a really great impact behind it. And so that's been exciting to see. And I know with this year's our upcoming International Coastal Cleanup, which happens in September of each year, it's usually the third Saturday in September, we will be focusing on, and I think we'll be using that trash tag as well, the hashtag, to kind of hop on that bandwagon, if you will, online.
Awesome. And can you, before I kind of go to the next question, because I think that's just a nice thing to bring up, and I think it would be perfect for any SOW members or anyone else that's listening, what is the International Coast Up Cleanup Day exactly?
Yeah, so the ICC is the third Saturday in September. So this year, that is the 21st of September. But that said, I encourage anyone and everyone to check out www.signuptocleanup.org. That's signuptocleanup.org. And on there, that's a map on our website where you can zoom in anywhere in the world that you're located and find upcoming cleanups near you and get connected to those because not all of them happen on that exact ICC day. Some of them kind of happen a couple weeks before or after, just kind of depending on what different nations and communities' factors are or circumstances. So we definitely encourage you to check out that map and sign up.
Definitely. And I think that's a great day to have just for that sort of thing, because I know it can kind of be it's easy to say, you know, we should organize a cleanup or we should take part in a cleanup, but it's a little more intimidating if no one's kind of getting the work done as far as scheduling those sorts of things. So to have a day like that is certainly helpful.
Yeah, totally agree.
One of the points that I know you mentioned earlier is kind of under the umbrella of what OSHA Conservancy does that I wanted to kind of learn more about and I think would be helpful is the topic of ocean acidification. So I was wondering if you could kind of define that and go into the kind of harm that that does to the ocean.
Sure, I will do my best. I am no expert, but if there are any follow-up questions, I'd love to connect you with some of our ocean acidification team. But in essence, ocean acidification is it's essentially the result of the ocean acting as a carbon sink. So it has been doing this for millennia. It's been absorbing carbon that's emitted into the atmosphere and kind of storing it. But obviously, as we all know, the problem now is that we're putting much more CO2 into the air. It's also making its way into the water via runoff of from the land of different chemicals and things like fertilizers is kind of also attributing to this. So because of this, I won't get into like the chemistry behind why this is happening in the ocean, but basically the water, the ocean is becoming more acidic. And so this affects a whole myriad of animals and plants too that grow and survive and this hurts these populations. So I'm thinking of animals that have calcifying shells or use calcium carbonate to build their shells. So think about things like shellfish, lobsters, crabs, anything that kind of have that hard exoskeleton. And then of course that down the chain impacts the people and the fisheries who rely on a lot of these species, either for consumption or for their local economy. And it's very closely linked to climate, as I mentioned. So we have both our ocean acidification program and our climate program working hand in hand to work in for solutions to kind of reduce the issues and some of the problems that really exacerbate ocean acidification. And to tie it back to the scuba diving experience that I've had, ocean acidification is really beginning to, and it has been impacting coral reef ecosystems, because since coral reefs are also calcifying creatures, and so coral reefs are kind of it's impacting their growth in a negative way, and already a very vulnerable ecosystem, and then to have this kind of compounding factor is really scary to see, and that's a lot of what we deal with ocean issues is lots of like layered, multi kind of issues compounding on one another. So that's a
Yeah.
little bit about ocean acidification. Did you have any other questions
That
on that?
I was going to say that's kind of perfect because you kind of touched on a lot of what I was going to follow up on as far as kind of how that can play into consumer wise in terms of, you know, local fisheries and how it impacts them as well as the kind of coral reef situation. Kind of jumping off of that point, when it comes to the topic of sustainable fishing, because I know that kind of is another one of those kind of multi-level kind of, you know, sort of issues. How exactly can people, if you could give like a brief definition on that, and then how can people kind of do their part in terms of helping to encourage that? Because I'm sure that plays into layers in terms of if you get a fit, you know, there's wildlife that's dying off in certain regions, so you try to get more in different regions, and that causes a whole chain of events and that sort of stuff.
I mean, the more we dive into any of these topics, it just like you were mentioning, there's just so many layers and it gets really complex. But sustainable fishing is definitely one of those too. So our program, we focus on, or it's really all about just smart management of fisheries. So you can kind of look at it twofold. We kind of work with the fishing industry, but also recreational fishermen as well. And to your question about, what can the average person do? Because this is just this big kind of just like mind-boggling issue, kind of like marine debris, actually. And so what I always tell folks with sustainable fishing is if you're a recreational fisher, obviously follow the guidelines, follow the seasons, have your permits, comply with the rules that exist. They're there for a reason, and it's all about just wanting to have this species population sustained so that you can fish it moving forward. So a lot of fishermen are actually fantastic stewards of their waters. And they really understand that balance of, the population and not overfishing. And then another thing I would tell just the average person, just from a consumer standpoint, is to just be mindful of the fish, the different species that you're ordering when you eat out. There is a really handy sustainable seafood, I think it's called Seafood Watch. There's an app. There's also a little card. You can check that out. I think it's through Monterey Bay Aquarium in California. So encourage people to check that out. Get educated on what those species are that are really kind of a red flag. They're not sustainably fished. The industry is not sustainable. And then take a look at some of the other species that are green, and that kind of gives you the go-ahead of, all right, if I see this on the menu, I can order this and feel good knowing that this species is at least managed responsibly.
That's really cool, and that's definitely a neat app.
Yeah, it's a handy tool.
Kind of jumping back to the point you mentioned earlier in terms of how Ocean Conservancy works to kind of benefit both not only the ecosystems, but kind of the people that are kind of wrapped up and involved in those ecosystems too. What can you talk about what Ocean Conservancy does to kind of try to both educate and to kind of do their part to kind of solve these really complex problems as far as things like ocean debris, like ocean acidification, like sustainable fishing?
Yeah. So one of the things that I am really proud of that I think Ocean Conservancy does well is that we try to bring all of the stakeholders to the table. So, for example, if we're, you know, as we continue to talk about fisheries, we work with coastal communities all over the United States. And if there's a particular bill or a policy that's being implemented or that's proposed to be implemented, and it will have an impact on some of these coastal economies and some of the fishermen that we actually know, you know, on a personal basis, we actually bring them into DC. We have these fly-ins where we bring all these stakeholders together and we take them to the Hill, and they have a chance to meet their representatives in Congress and chat about how, you know, on a personal level, they can talk about their livelihood. They can talk about their, they can represent their community, right? Because they're the ones that are on the water. They're the experts. And we at Ocean Conservancy just try to connect them with policymakers in that sense and the people who are making these decisions. And so I think that's really powerful that we can kind of bridge that gap, because it can feel like the Congress and policymakers are this kind of outside bubble that people can't really tap into. So we really do try to bring those stakeholders to meet with those people face to face. And I think it's been really beneficial, and it's helped move some smart policies forward or help defend some policies that might have been on the chopping block. So we do definitely a bit of defense as well when it comes to all of the issues that we work on. I can say, you know, from the trash-free seas perspective, we not only do the international coastal cleanup, which like you mentioned, it's kind of that one day a year that we can bring the issue up again. There's a flurry of media around it. It raises awareness and it educates people, most importantly, as they're collecting data on what they find. But beyond the cleanup, we have these data available. We want them to be used by scientists, by, you know, industry innovators, to actually work on upstream solutions, right? Because we don't want to be cleaning yeah. For the rest of our lives. So we have a whole nother side of our program that works on, you know, works with industry to come up with solutions. And then also we're working on this kind of big monster that we're realizing is contributing to marine debris, and that is waste management and waste infrastructure that might be lagging in some nations. And really, it's just a result of economies growing without waste infrastructure keeping up. So it, you know, not only is it a wildlife and an ocean impact, but it's actually a people problem, and it has human health impacts too. So it's this really complex issue that, again, because it's so complex, we kind of have to tackle it at multiple angles. Does that make sense? I just kind of gave two examples there.
No, yeah, absolutely. I get it. I was going to say, I think having that sort of thing in place and being able to, as you said, bridge the gap between people and lawmakers is great. Because I know one of the things I would suggest, I know later on I'm going to ask about kind of what more, you know, what the average person can do to make an impact in these areas, mm-hmm. but definitely looking up, you know, tools or articles or things that are helpful, and that could be on the Ocean Conservancy website, for example.
Totally.
I'm sure there's things you can link to, you know, if you're contacting a local congressperson, like, hey, this is matters to me, this is really important, and I don't think enough's being talked about, and I think you should, you know, bring this up. all that sort of stuff can definitely go a long way too. So it's not just all of us coming together to clean. It's also us coming together to, you know, let people who can make more, like, more decisions on that level.
Totally.
Use your voice,
use your vote. Check out our website and sign up for emails. We oftentimes will send out notifications around different policies that might be on the table, and even provide a simple, like, letter form if you want to write to your representative. We make that really easy. So totally agree. And only one other thing that I'd add about what people can do on the cleanup front, check out our app. We have an app called CleanSwell, and it's free to download on any smart device, but it basically allows you to track the trash that you're finding. So we've actually been seeing that hashtag pop up via our CleanSwell app users as well. That's been really exciting to see. But basically, that app just takes our paper data form that we've had for years, and it puts it on your phone. So you simply just tap the items as you go, and then you submit your data right to Ocean Conservancy. So right there, you're not only doing a cleanup, but you're also helping to track that really valuable marine debris data as well.
Totally. That's definitely a great tool. To kind of switch it to kind of the other end of the spectrum, if we aren't doing enough as far as, getting this information out and enough isn't really done, what are some of the potential kind of consequences that can come from us not doing enough to clean up trash or kind of the ocean continue going the direction it's going, that sort of stuff?
Oh, gosh, that's a very scary
I realize this is a very drastic, like, hey, so we're talking about nice things, but let's go to doomsday.
No, I mean, it's a valid question, and it's one that we hope we never have to kind of confront. But I know from the trash perspective, the scientists are estimating that by 2050, if we don't do something now to drastically kind of turn off the faucet, so to speak, of marine debris and really plastic pollution entering our ocean, we could have more plastic than fin fish, you know, by weight in the ocean. So that's a really scary statistic that we've seen kind of thrown around the media. And I mean, marine debris is already impacting all seven species of sea turtles. We're finding it in so many species of seabirds and marine mammals. It's an entanglement issue. It's really devastating to see the impacts already. So my prediction is that would just be worsened if we really don't do anything. And then as far as some of the other of these big ocean challenges that Ocean Conservancy works on, I mean, it's scary to think about, but the next generation or two, they might not have that beautiful coral reef that they could scuba dive and see in the Bahamas or anywhere in the world. So just to think about, like, on an ecosystem scale, that we could have entire ecosystems kind of wiped out and really the entire chemistry of our ocean changed is a reality that we don't want to see. So I'll leave it at that. And you kind of hit the nail on the head earlier with, you don't have to live near the ocean to feel its impacts and to know that it's such an integral part of life, right? Like, we zoom out on the earth and it's a blue planet for a reason. I mean, the ocean is why we're here, right? Every other breath that we breathe is because of the ocean. And, you know, so many people rely on seafood as their main source of protein. I mean, we could just go on and on about how the ocean is impacting our lives, whether we live on the coast or not. So, just to drill that home, and I think people are getting there, right? Like, I think marine debris is kind of this entryway for a lot of people to feel their connection to the water, no matter where they live.
Absolutely. I think that's an excellent way to kind of sum up that. That is a very kind of complex thing, but I think you did a great job of doing that. On the topic of what the average person can do, is there anything you think we kind of missed out on as far as, you know, finding what you can do in your area, the different kind of apps or resources that are out there, thinking about contacting a local congressperson or on Capitol Hill? Is there anything else there?
You know, I'm a big advocate for, and maybe it's because I work with a lot of educators, but just to talk to your friends and family about it, keep it a topic of conversation and keep it hopeful. I definitely think that at Ocean Conservancy, we work towards solutions. We know that they're out there. It doesn't have to be doom and gloom. So yeah, when you're talking to family and friends, give them one positive thing that they can do. Talk to them about reusable options. Talk to them about sustainable seafood, you know, whatever it is, it might be that connection for them to the water. Speak in their language, so to speak. And right. I'm also really hopeful kids, I work a lot with youth and communicate a lot with educators, and it's really hopeful and inspiring to see the solutions that they're drumming up. So just be creative and be innovative, and you don't have to be a marine biologist to help solve the ocean's issues.
Right. To kind of start wrapping it up, for anyone that kind of wants to learn more about what Ocean Conservancy does or some of the other projects or things, where can people go to learn more about the organization and what's being done?
Yeah, we just did a nice update to our website. So the first place I'd have you stop is oceanconservancy.org. And you can kind of toggle through and see our different programs and read about what we do. That's where you can also find that map to find a cleanup near you. And also I would just say, join some listservs. There are all sorts of environmental and ocean-based listservs out there. So if it's marine protected areas that you're interested in, there's a listserv for that. If it's marine debris, there's a whole listserv for that. So just educate yourself and, you know, keep questioning what's out there. And yeah, check out our website, check out CleanSwell. We've got information about what we do on the app as well.
Awesome. And I think the kind of last thing I asked is, I don't know, there may be something missed out on. So is there one topic or one resource that we didn't cover that you want to bring up now, or did we kind of hit everything?
You know, otherwise fine. I think I talked your ear off. I think I hit just that.
It's okay.
I mean, we're always available. So I guess the last thing I'd say is that if anyone ever has questions about for Ocean Conservancy, you know, feel free to email my program, and then we can always get it to the right, you know, coworker here. So I'd say the email address to do that is cleanup@oceanconservancy.org if there are any more questions for us.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thanks, Stephen.
Hi, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Sarah. And before I go any further, I just wanted to thank Sarah for agreeing to come on the Soundcast and for Ocean Conservancy agreeing to kind of come on and help kick off the start of this series. I think that Ocean Conservancy is a phenomenal organization to support, and with it being summer, it's kind of a natural fit for them to go first. As Sarah mentioned, the CleanSwell app is a terrific way to make an impact in your community and also to help support Ocean Conservancy's mission by getting all of that valuable data in terms of what kind of trash is showing up where. And I think that you can even take it a step further as a SAL member and help organize cleanup events in your community throughout the year, and in particular in the school year, and you can use the app for that as well. One other point that I wanted to mention before I wrap this up is that the Ocean Conservancy is one of the charities that you can support on the Charity Miles app. And if you haven't downloaded the app already, make sure to do that and join Team Sigma Alpha Lambda. And also be sure to download the Swell app too. Or CleanSwell app, my mistake. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. And stay tuned for more episodes coming soon. Have a wonderful day. Bye.